There's a million and one reasons we don't share our faith. I know, because I've used a million of them. Scott gave me the other one earlier this morning. So I know there's a million and one reasons. And I know some of you've got a whole long list of them. I understand. I get it. But what we want to do this morning is we want to look at just this one verse, and we want to be able to say, and Scott used the word already. He didn't know I was going to use it. Are we willing to share our faith? And are we able to share our faith? I'm not an evangelist. That's the first reason I usually use. I'm a little bit chicken. I'm not as outgoing as I'd like to be. I don't have that personality that just goes up to strangers and meets them and starts conversations with them. I'm much better at one-on-one discipleship stuff. I'd rather sit around Starbucks and have a coffee with somebody I know and talk to them about Jesus. I've been trained, but I'm a little bit frightened because some of the ways that I've been trained, I think, were for a day gone by. I'm frightened sometimes because I think I might get rejected, or what if I get the message wrong? I feel guilty because sometimes I sit on the plane and I look at the person next to me and I'm thinking, oh God, I hope you don't want me to tell them about you. And I feel that sense of obligation, or I feel frustrated because there are times when I share my faith and it doesn't seem to work. How about you? Million and one, million and two, million and three, we can come up with lots and lots of reasons why we don't share our faith. What hinders us? What stops us? Well, you know that we're in this series called Everyday Church. So flip with me to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. And although we're going to pay attention to that, you can go forwards and you can go backwards and you can realize that over the last 6 weeks, what we've been doing is we've been looking at this story. This story that is about the reality that we no longer are at the center of our culture. The Christian story is no longer the predominant one. It used to be, if you go back a generation or two, everybody knew, at least knew about the Christian story. Probably don't have to give you lots of examples about people that you know at work. Raheem, you can probably think of some people at work that you would get into a conversation with, and they would not only just sort of say, well, I'm not interested in the Christian story. Some of them may not even know about who Jesus is. We know that we've been pushed to the margins. We've talked before about the $5 bill. Does everybody remember what it says on the $5 bill? You turn to the back of the $5 bill and you see this picture of these kids who are skating on the skating rink. Remember this? Remember that little picture? You've got to have brilliant eyes, Flora, to be able to see this. It's got this little picture on our $5 bill that says, the winters of our childhood were spent in three places. Remember what they were? You guys know this? We've talked about this, haven't we? We haven't talked about this? Gerard, have a look at it, right? I don't think you guys, can you read it? Flora's got glasses. It says, Jen's got it, can you read it? Okay, Jen's going to read it real loud so we can all hear it.
The school, the church, and the skating rink, but our real life was on the skating rink.
The seasons of our childhood were spent in three places, the school, the church, and the skating rink, but our real life was spent on the skating rink. It used to be in grandparents' age, right? A couple generations gone by. The church was the very center of things, but not so anymore. And Peter is talking about this throughout the whole book of 1 Peter. No longer is our story the predominant one. And so therefore, Jason, how do we live when the culture's pushed us to the margin? How do we learn to live life on the margins? You remember a couple of weeks ago, we sort of hit one of the high points where Peter said, oh, you guys, I wish you could understand. I wish you could grasp the reality that our identity is no longer in what we look like, how many curves we have in our bodies, what kind of clothes we wear, what kind of car we drive, what house we live in. Our value is not found in that. It's found in our identity being rooted in the fact that I'm His. It's not about that Bob and Brenda got together and look, out came me. No, instead, it's about this reality that I am His. My identity is in Him. My character is changed. No longer do I live according to the patterns of the world, but instead I look at my dad and I say, because he's holy, therefore I will be holy. And then Peter said, "And Cameron, your purpose is all changed. You're part of a new mission, the mission of God. You've joined the family business." Last week we came to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. We talked about it. We said, we witness to the reality of God at work in our lives by the way that we act. Today we come to the verse again and we say, we witness to the reality of God at work in the world through what we say. And I'm only going to talk about two things. Are we willing? And are we able? So come with me to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. I read it as we prayed. "But in your hearts revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared." Let me stop there. "But in your hearts revere Christ as Lord." Or some translations say, "Set apart Christ as Lord." Always be prepared. Two things. Set apart Christ as Lord and be prepared. Let's start with the second one, to be prepared. Are we prepared? Now, there's two different ways we can understand that word, to be prepared. One is sort of practically, have we done our homework? But the other is an emotional preparedness. Are we ready? A couple of weeks ago in church business meeting, we talked about, or I gave the illustration, that so often we're on our heels. And being prepared means that we move from our heels to our toes. We're anticipating, we're expecting that God's going to work. So are we prepared emotionally to begin to be able to share our faith? Shelley loves it when I do chores around the house. They don't happen that often. And some of the reasons they don't happen is because sometimes I look at the chore and I think it's this monumental task that I've got to do. And I don't have the energy and I feel weary from maybe too much work. Or, you know, I just look at it and I think I can't accomplish this. And somehow I'm sitting back on my heels thinking there's no way, Mark, I can get this done. Occasionally I get pushed enough. And I go and I get the thing done, and it takes me about 5 minutes, and it wasn't really that big a deal. And I step back and I think, why in the world didn't I do that weeks ago? It wasn't that hard. That's what Peter is saying to us here. Are you prepared? Be prepared emotionally that you're able to say, this isn't so bad. And there's a couple things he says as he's explaining that to us. First of all, you have to remember it's Peter. Peter, the very man who understood this change of purpose in our lives. One of the reasons, one out of the million, plus one. One of the reasons that we give for not sharing our faith is we say, it's not my job. It's not my task. It's somebody else's responsibility. And Peter says, no, Cameron, that's not true. Don't use that excuse because you've had a change of purpose. He says, I understood that change of purpose. I remember the day, and Scott brought it up earlier. Or I was fishing on the beach. I thought my purpose was fishing for fish. And Jesus came along and he met me, and you know the story. And he said, no, now your purpose is no longer fishing for fish. It's fishing for people. Just pause for a minute in your mind. And I want you to think of your job. Gerard, think of your job for a second. I mean, it's a good job. You've done some really good things. But no offense, but Jesus put you on this earth for a whole lot more than just finishing that job. Or I think about Shelley, and I think we have this conversation so often. I mean, it's great that you hit tennis balls, and there's nothing wrong with coaching tennis. But wouldn't it be sad if that's the only reason that God put you on this earth? To hit a tennis ball, or to do some renovation stuff, or you fill in the blank, whatever your job is. Mark, we were talking before about designing kitchens. Now, it's great to design kitchens. But man, would that stink if that's the only reason that God put us on the face of this earth? Peter said, I was a fisherman. I mean, okay, we get to eat them, and I made some money in being able to sell them at the market and all that kind of stuff, but fixing somebody's house is nothing compared to the vocation of being able to see Christ work in their life. God didn't put Shelley on a tennis court because he thinks that somehow hitting a tennis ball is the greatest thing in the world. He put her on a tennis court because there is a mission field for her to be able to relate to people. He sent her as a missionary into that place. He sent you, Gerard. We've had this conversation many times. He sent you into that area, that arena, that area of life. Not so you could just fix homes, although that's okay. But so that you might be able to share a brand new purpose, joining the family business. He's changed us from being a tennis coach into being an ambassador. He's changed us from designing kitchens into being an ambassador who works in that industry, that field. The same is true for all of us. And one of the reasons we fail to share our faith is we've never made that switch. The second excuse maybe that we give, and Peter says that you need to be able to be willing. We say, well, I'm not kind of like Peter. I mean, Peter's got this amazing personality, right? Where he just sort of jumps into everything. I'm a little more shy. I'm a little more reserved. I mean, do you remember some scenes in the life of Peter? He's just that guy that, you know, there's Jesus. There's a storm. And Jesus is walking across the water. He's walking across the water to the boat where they're all in. And Peter looks at him and he goes, I can do that. Jesus, tell me to come. I'm going to walk on the water. So what does he do? He gets out there and he starts walking on the water and he goes, oh, that wasn't so good. And then he starts to sink, right? Because he loses faith. He's always this guy that opens his mouth and sticks his foot in it. Same thing up in the Mount of Transfiguration. This amazing scene where all of a sudden Moses and Elijah are right there beside Jesus as he's being transfigured. And Peter's there. I mean, all I can imagine doing is just getting on my face and being in awe. But not Peter. No, Peter's got to open up his mouth again. And he goes, hey, Lord, this is kind of cool that we're here together. Why don't we put up some tents and we can hang out here for a little while? You see, Peter's got this amazing outgoing ability. And you and I might step back and go, it's okay for Peter to say he's willing, but I'm a little bit more chicken. Flora, you're kind of outgoing. There's lots of times when I'm just amazed at how friendly you are and how you just meet new people in a hurry, and it's brother this and sister that, and you're just amazing in how you're outgoing. And I wish I could be more like you sometimes, but I'm not. And there's other people that are far more sort of reserved than I am. Isn't it a good thing that God didn't make us all the same? It's a really good thing. Because you are sent to some people, and I'm sent to some other people, and people that are even more reserved. You know, we need people that are more reserved in their personality. Personality has nothing to do with this. Because different people are sent to different ones. There's no way in the world that some very reserved people would ever spend time with me. I would just be too much for them. And maybe you too, Flora. But there's others that are reserved and more quiet that are able to say, hey, that person I could listen to a little bit. Our purpose has changed, and our personality is not about whether we're outgoing or more reserved. He sends us all. And he says we need to be prepared so that we're willing to be sent. The second thing he says in Are You Willing is right there at the beginning of verse 15. In your hearts, revere Christ as Lord, or set apart Christ is Lord. All right, here's the hard part of today. One of the reasons that I don't think we share our faith is I'm not sure we've actually set apart Christ as Lord. I'm not sure that we've actually set Jesus as Lord. In fact, if I said it more directly, I'm not sure that Jesus is Lord of some of our lives. It took Peter a while. And Peter got to walk with Jesus for 3 years. He got to see all the miracles that Jesus had done. He got to listen to all the teaching. He got to be right there in the midst of all the nitty-gritty of what Jesus was doing. And even then, after those 3 years, do you remember? There he is on the night that Jesus is being betrayed. And what does he do? 3 times people come to him and say, you were with Jesus. Nope, didn't know him. It wasn't until the Holy Spirit came upon Peter in the early part of Acts. We see, as we read a little bit farther in the story of the New Testament church, in Acts chapter 4, where Peter now no longer is denying that he knows Jesus, no longer is denying that relationship, but instead, with great boldness, is standing up in front of the people, the very people that put Jesus to death, and he's telling them what for. Here's what happened. Here's who this Jesus is. And then in that great passage in Acts chapter 4, it says, they took note that these men had been with Jesus. Friends, we need to be willing. It's our purpose. But we need to also be willing because we've set Christ as Lord. Sometimes we're not willing to share our faith because he's not Lord to us. What we've done is we've allowed all kinds of other things in our lives to creep in and for them to become Lord instead of for Jesus to become Lord. We cannot possibly share about our faith and the power of the Spirit unless we learn to trust and obey him. And how do we do that? We spend time with him. When I spend time with Jesus, I begin to understand and begin to have the heart for people that Jesus has. I begin to understand when it says in the New Testament that Jesus stood outside Jerusalem and wept over Jerusalem because he saw the crowds and crowds and crowds of people that he had been sent. He had been sent to, and yet they didn't get it. I can't possibly have the heart of Jesus for those that are my friends that don't know him until I spend time with Jesus. I can't possibly know my purpose or the intentions of God in my life until I spend time with Jesus. I want you to imagine for a minute that I came one Sunday and I told you that one of my kids had run away from home. They were angry with me. There was some kind of disagreement in the house, and one of them had left. And I would stand here week after week telling you about my broken heart, telling you about how desperate I was for my kids to come home. And then I want you to picture being on the streets in downtown Vancouver and bumping into one of my kids who had run away, and you knowing full well what was going on in my heart as a result of my kid being out of my house. What do you think you would do? What do you think you would do when you bumped into my kid on the street in Vancouver? Would you just say, hey, you know, you should give your dad a call sometime because I think he's kind of waiting for you to come home? No, you wouldn't. You would know my heartache. Because you love me and because you love Shelley, you would stop and you would do anything you could possibly do in the moment to convince that kid, it's okay. Let's go home together. And Peter says to us, are you willing? Isaiah in the Old Testament said he was willing. Here I am, Lord, send me. Friends, sometimes I think what we've done is we don't get close enough to Jesus and we say, here I am, Lord, send somebody else. Are we willing? The second thing, are we able? There's three things I want to tell you here in this section, and I hope they're an encouragement. I hope they're a help. But I think they're important for us to copy down. Three things that I think are helpful as we learn what it means to be able to speak and share our faith. The first is that we need to move from being a reporter to being a witness. From being a reporter to being a witness. Can you imagine coming onto the scene of an accident? If you're the reporter, you come and you find a whole bunch of people that are witnesses and you have to write a story that says, here's what happened. Now, if you're not a very good writer, then you're not going to be a very good reporter. I'm not a very good writer, and I would hate to be a reporter because I would be afraid all the time that I'd get the facts wrong, I'd get the details out of order, I would write in sloppy, poor grammar, and my dad would come and correct me all the time. I know he always used to do that. But if I'm a witness, that's completely different. And Jesus invites us not to be reporters when we're sharing the story. He invites us to be witnesses. The reality is that we're not telling about something that's out there that we know nothing about. Rather, when we are able to share our faith, we put into our minds this idea that I am a witness. The problem is, not many of us are witnesses. What do I mean by that? I think sometimes we reduce the sharing of our faith down to this thing that we've heard about or others have told us about instead of something we've experienced on our own or something we've seen or heard on our own. And I think one of the ways that we can practice or one of the ways that we can engage in this is to be asking ourselves the question every single day, Jason, where did you see God at work today? Because when you can answer that question, you're a witness. Mark, where did you hear? When did you hear God speak? Because when you can answer that question, you become a witness. And what happens is instead of just reporting on something, we're now able to say, I can tell this story because I was there. I saw it. I heard him speak. It becomes a completely different angle on something. Second thing, not just from being a reporter to a witness, we need to move from inviting people to church instead to introducing them to Jesus. Listen carefully to this. Stop inviting people to church. Stop inviting people to church. Or at least stop having as your first and primary idea, I need to get my friend to church. You don't need to get your friend to church. You need to introduce them to Jesus. There's a massive difference. There's a sociologist in Canada by the name of Reg Bibby. Some of you have heard this before. Bibby said that when 20 years ago, a generation ago, if you found 100 people in the neighborhood in Canada, 100 people that had spiritual questions, 50 of them would go to church. They'd go to church to find the answer. If you found the same 100 people in a neighborhood today, same 100 people that had spiritual questions, he said only 10% on average would go to church to find the answer. What it seems like to me is that we as Christians are working extra hard at saying, well, if there's only 10%, and really in Vancouver it's only 2%, we better do a really good job as a church of being the kind of church where that 10% or that 2% would go. Wrong question. No, actually we need to find a way that we can go to the 90% and not report on something, but be a witness to the reality that Jesus isn't just someone who died 2,000 years ago, but Jesus is someone who lives today. The problem that we have is that we cannot introduce people to Jesus if we don't know who he is. Let me explain. Every one of us has had this experience. I know we have. It's horrible. You see somebody that you haven't seen for a little while. You get into a conversation, and perhaps your wife or your husband or a close friend are there with you, and you're looking at this person and you're thinking, I really should introduce Shelley to that person over there, but I, for the life of me, can't remember the name of that person. And so you're thinking, and you're trying to listen to the conversation, and you know full well that they're saying, why don't you introduce me to your wife? And inwardly you're going, I can't, because I don't remember your name. I wish you'd say your name. Friends, I think that's a great picture of what we do in evangelism sometimes. We don't introduce our friends to Jesus, because quite frankly, we know lots about Jesus. But we don't know him. We've forgotten. We cannot possibly bear witness, nor can we introduce our friends to Jesus unless we're spending time with him. What's the practice? Begin to talk about Jesus. Don't just ask questions, where have I seen God at work or where have I heard him speak? Start there. But then even amongst ourselves, talk about Jesus over and over and over and over again. What we do is we compartmentalize and we say, you know what we need to do? Let's talk about life. And then, oh yeah, a couple minutes on Sunday and maybe around the dinner table and somewhere else we'll talk about Jesus. No, find a way to talk about Jesus and what he's doing in your life, even amongst ourselves, over and over and over and over again. Do not let an hour go by where we're not telling one another about where we've seen Jesus at work in our lives and what he means to us. Because then we're familiar with him. Do not let a day go by. Who was it that shared earlier about somebody? Ron, was it you? Who shared about somebody asking the question of, no, it was Blair. That I think it was Scott at the retreat that had said to Blair, what has God said to you today? Friends, we got to be practicing that all the time. in order for us to be able to be good witnesses when the opportunity presents itself for us to share about the reason for the hope that's within us. Last one, then we're quitting. Move from being reporters to witnesses. Move from inviting people to church to introducing them to Jesus. Lastly, move from telling them doctrine to sharing with them good news. One thing that happened in all the stories that you told before I got up here. Not one of you said, well, you know, I examined all the facts and I went down through all the documents and I looked at this doctrine, this doctrine, this doctrine, this doctrine, this doctrine. I checked them all off and said, therefore, okay. It's not about doctrine. I get scared out of my head sometimes, believing that sometimes when we evangelize, we have to make people believe something. It's not about that. We're witnessing where God's at work in our lives. We're introducing them to Jesus, and we're sharing with them a story. You know what the gospel means? Good news. Some of the doctrine that we try to argue about left, right, and center doesn't feel like a whole lot of good news at times to me. But you know what's good news? It's good news that from the beginning of time, God has loved us so much that he desires to be one with his people, and he desires to bring redemption and reconciliation. And so what we get to do is we get to listen to people's stories, and we get to see where God's at work in there, and we get to share with them, here's where God is renewing my life, redeeming my life, restoring things in my life. I get to tell them stories. It's not about saying, if you believe this, you won't die and go to hell. Instead, it's about the reality that God couldn't wait for us. And so instead of waiting for us to die and go be with him, heaven has broken in. The kingdom of God is here. The story is about the reality that our God reigns. We practice. We practice witnessing to where we've seen God at work. We practice telling stories about Jesus and what he's done in our lives. We practice being good news, telling the good news, instead of just arguing people with apologetics into a belief system. Well, there's more, but that's enough for today. That's enough time.